The Will Cain Show podcast is presented by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day. What's in your wallet?
This is the Will Cain Podcast on ESPN Radio.
By all indications, sports is coming back. And it's coming back soon. And it might be coming back coast to coast. New York to California. And when it comes back, it will come back not fragile, but ready to withstand an attack from the coronavirus. But what's changed? It might just be our perception. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and on ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. And you can join the conversation at 888-729-3776. I'll explain what I mean about what's exactly changed when it comes to the coronavirus and sports and what we can expect in the fall in just a moment here on The Will Cain Show. But Horace Grant, former Bull, was on ESPN 1000 in Chicago. And he had some things to say about Michael Jordan and The Last Dance, a documentary about the final year of the Chicago Bulls dynasty. He refers to it as a so-called documentary. And one of the interviewers says, "Why do you say it's a so-called documentary?" Horace Grant then said the following: "When that so-called documentary is about one person, basically, and he has the last word on what's going to be put out there, it's not a documentary. It's his narrative about what happens in the last quote-unquote dance. That's not a documentary because a whole bunch of things was cut out, edited out. So that's why I call it a so-called documentary." I will say this, Horace is not 100% wrong. This was largely a story told from the perspective of Michael Jordan. There are others, there are other voices, and Horace Grant is one of those voices you hear from time to time in there. And it was a great piece of entertainment and nostalgia, and it took us back through the story of the 90 Chicago Bulls dynasty and Michael Jordan's career. But do I think that that documentary arrived at 100% truth? I do not. Do I think it was capable of telling the entire story? I do not. When it comes to why Michael Jordan left the NBA in the middle of his career, I'm going to give you an example. Here's something that I would have found fascinating, okay? So in the final episode of The Last Dance, Michael Jordan is asked by the interviewer, when the team was torn apart after the 98 season and you were at your peak, did you find that satisfying? Some guys like walking away at their peak. Or did you find that maddening? And Jordan does not hesitate. He says, maddening. I found that maddening. In other words, to leave some juice left in the squeeze, to leave some money on the table, to leave titles there, to be won, that's maddening. Well, let me ask you this follow-up question. This is what occurred to me almost immediately. Then why'd you walk away in the middle of that run? Why'd you walk away in 94-95? I know they dealt with the gambling accusations, and they kind of largely just waved their hand at them, said it was ridiculous. And maybe it was. But I found that an inconsistency. He was burned out in 94, but he wasn't burned out in 98. He found it maddening in 98, but perfectly fine to step away in 94. That mindset's not something you turn off and on. Obviously, look at Michael Jordan to this day. Has he turned off that mindset? That competitive nature? That win-at-all-cost mindset? No. So it's highly suspicious that Michael Jordan walked away in 94-95. Highly. But I don't think we've got that full story. My point is, I think Horace Grant has a point. It wasn't an absolute 100% truth-telling mechanism. It was Michael Jordan's story. So here is Horace Grant on ESPN 1000 Chicago giving you some examples of what he's talking about. First, here is how he was to the younger players on the team.
He felt that he could dominate me, but that was sadly mistaken because, you know, whenever he went at me, I went at him right back, you know. But in terms of Will Perdue, Steve Kerr, and the young man Scott Burrell, I mean, that was heartbreaking. You know, to see a guy, a leader, to go at those guys like that. I understand in terms of practicing, you know, you get, you have a push and shove there, here and there, but outright punching and things of that nature and calling them the B's and the H's, That wasn't called for.
It's Horace Grant on ESPN 1000. He was asked, you remember the documentary, that it was implied by others that Horace Grant, I think Michael Jordan is the one that said Horace Grant was the leak to Sam Smith's book, The Jordan Rules. This is what Horace Grant had to say to that. He said, this is a downright, outright, complete lie. Lie, lie, lie. If MJ had a grudge with me, let's settle this like men. Let's talk about it. Or we can settle it another way. But yet, and still, he goes out and puts this lie out that I was the source behind the book. Horace Grant went on to talk about a supposed incident where Jordan told a flight attendant not to give Horace Grant dinner on the plane because Grant had a bad game. Listen to this.
If anybody, comes up and try to snatch my food away, I'm going to do my best to beat their ass. And believe me, back then I could have took MJ in a heartbeat. Yes, it's true that he told the flight attendant, well, don't give him anything because he played like crap. And I went right back at it. I said some choice words that I won't repeat on here, but I said some choice words and stood up. If you want it, you come and get it. And of course, he didn't move. He was just barking.
It's Horace Grant again on ESPN 1000. Now, in the documentary, they talk about Horace wanted more shine. Somebody said that, and he didn't feel like he got it. The Michael and Scotty got all of the shine. But back to the idea that this was 100% truth. Look, Michael Jordan lives in the world of demigods now. He's a myth, and one that we appreciate. And there's value to myths making. There's value to that kind of hero. But let's not also mix it up that it's 100% truth, everything that we saw. And I would imagine, I would love to interview Scottie Pippen. Now, I've had some harsh words for Scottie Pippen on what we saw in that documentary. I would love to sit down with Scottie, and I think I could get some good stuff out of him on how he feels about that storytelling, about whether or not he thought it was 100% true. And Horace Grant was asked about Scottie Pippen, whether or not he thought he was fairly portrayed. He said, I've never seen a quote-unquote number two guy as decorated as Scottie Pippen portrayed so badly in terms of the migraine, in terms of the 1.6 or 7 seconds that Jordan called him out for being selfish. I've never seen this in all my life, and I respect Pippen. He was out there for game six, could barely walk, getting knocked down on his back, tried to do whatever he could to help that team. Never seen somebody so disrespected as Scottie Pippen is what Horace Grant has to say. Maybe the truth doesn't matter to some. Michael Jordan can still be a hero, but we can also acknowledge that story isn't completely told. It's shocking. But it's not 100% completely told if the purpose of the story is to tell the truth. Sports are coming back. College football looks headed back. Professional sports, as the governor of New York, the governor of Texas, and the governor of California all said that within the month of June, you could have pro sports back. Myron Metcalf was on Sunday morning on ESPN, and he had this to say about what's different now about sports coming back.
Well, I'll tell you what they're showing us, and I'll tell you what the UFC, which actually had a positive test a week ago and then hosted three consecutive events, what they are showing us as well. These leagues aren't fighting perception anymore. If you recall, about a month ago, we all said, wait a minute, you can't play sports. You cannot put these athletes at risk. We're past that, man. We're past that, and I think we're past that as a society. And I think folks are deciding that there's some risk involved no matter what, as long as we don't have a vaccine. And I think sports organizations have run with that and said, look, we understand that cases could happen. We're going to do our best to keep everyone safe. Also, if there's a positive test, we're not going to stop everything. They are showing us that we are no longer fighting against perception. This is going to happen. Sports are going to resume at some point.
And perception has changed. That's my point that I've made several times that I think is what's driving this change. Obviously, we know the role of money. It's just, and it's not just professional sports, it's college sports as well. The money is too great. It's too important. Too many lives, too many jobs are on the line for sports to remain on the sideline. But the perception of the risk, think about what it was in March. Think about what it is now. The perception of the shutdown orders, the stay-at-home orders, the quarantine, our tolerance of it, all of that has changed. And the point that we should realize is it will have changed in the fall as well. So when there are positive coronavirus tests on a team, we won't see that team get shut down. We won't see the domino effect of leagues getting shut down. We're going to see this handled, even if there's a second wave, completely differently in the fall. That's my prediction. Because as Myron says, our perception of it all has changed. Bobby Carpenter is going to join us next on The Will Cain Show.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card. That's why we created Eno, the Capital One assistant that looks out for surprise credit card charges like overtipping, duplicate charges, or potential fraud, then sends an alert to your phone and helps if you need to fix them. Another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details.
GEICO knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with GEICO on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Does anybody care about the truth when it comes to Michael Jordan? Or is the myth just good enough? It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. We're hanging out with our friend, ESPN football analyst Bobby Carpenter. What's up, Bobby?
Billy, thanks for having me on, sir.
Yeah, man, I'm glad to hang out with you today. I'm going to start with something you told us some months ago here on the Will Cain Show. And I think you said it somewhere else as well, either on Get Up or one of the television shows on ESPN. You said if college football comes back, but it does not include fans in the stands, the ramifications would be massive, the financial implications. In other words, what you were saying then is that it's not going to be good enough just to bring football back. You're going to have fans in the stands. Otherwise, huge fallout. It looks increasingly like that's where we're headed, Bobby. Yes, we get college football back, but I can't imagine fans in the stands right now.
And you're smart to think that. And I wouldn't be surprised if some parts of the country, they have some sort of modified attendance. I mean, it wouldn't be even close to capacity. But just think about this. And this isn't – I'm not proud to have said any of that because it's terrible. But you look around the country, there's athletic departments now that are cutting sports before football has even been altered just due to the belief that it's not going to be the same and that most of these athletic departments were already financially teetering a little bit. But if you don't have fans in the stands, the non-conference games don't work for the big schools because they have to pay out money for those schools to come in. You're not getting the gate to be able to pay out that money. That's going to decimate a lot of the group of five schools that are coming in because they're losing the $1 million, $1.5 million paydays. But then also the majority of college football, the money is generated from the in-game experience. It's generated from the ticket sales. It's generated from alcohol sales if they have it, the concessions, the parking, the donations that come from that for the ability to buy the tickets, just the donations in goodwill. When people feel good, they're going to give more because their team's playing better. And if you don't have that, the rest of the season, like the rest of the year, rather, for college athletics is going to look remarkably different, because even if it does play, there's going to be a massive budget shortfall, which we are seeing come to fruition right now. And that is why there's a huge push to at least have the games, but there's still going to be massive ramifications for losing probably close to 50% of many of these departments' revenue.
You anticipate the game day experience is 50% of revenue. We've heard it's 40% for the NBA. You think college football gets up towards 50% of total revenue?
I'll just do the math for you right here. Is the fact, you know, knowing a lot about Ohio State and being around it and studying it and all these things, I mean, it's one of the big programs. So you could probably say this is going to be similar to Alabama, similar to a Texas, whatever it might be, is the stadiums are full, they're large, but the TV deal that each Big Ten school gets, they're getting around $55, $60 million. Okay, the budget's about $200 million. So where does the rest of that money come from? It comes from the fact that you multiply 100 times, you know, 60, 100, I think the tickets are almost 80 now, but we'll average them down to 70. 100,000 times 70, you're getting $7 million right there, boom. You think half of those people are spending some cash in the stadium? Like, you're getting to $10 million pretty quickly, $11, $12 million. You multiply that times, you know, 8, all right. I mean, you're over 80, you're close to $100 million. So there you go right there. Like, it's not mm-hmm. the hardest math that you're going to have to do.
Mm-hmm. And so what you said is you can see that in Bobby Carpenter here on the Will Cain Show. What you're seeing is sports cut across the country from athletic departments because of that loss in revenue. So did you also say you thought schedules would be pared back this year? So like non-conference games, it doesn't make sense to put them on to bring in group of five teams and have a non-conference game? Or keep that on the schedule, which I couldn't tell you were saying there.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me if they are paired back. I think a lot of places have talked about it, conferences, due to safety, but like also the financial ramifications, because if you're not bringing in the extra $13 million or $12 million or whatever it might be, how are you going to be able to justify the $1 million payout to that school that's coming in? And so that's money going out of your pocket. But that other school, you know, the mid-majors, the Sun Belts, the MACs, those schools need those dollars too coming in. So their athletic departments are going to be dramatically impacted as well.
What is your best guess right now, Bobby? I think we're going to have college football. And I wouldn't be surprised if we get something close to a regular college football season. You could, maybe you're right, and I need to think about this and what it means for non-conference scheduling, but the money that you're describing, the need to recoup some of it, is too great. My feeling is once we get to the fall, we're going to have college football, we're going to have professional football. It might look different, but I think we're going to get much further along in accomplishing normal than we anticipate right now.
I think you're correct in saying that, because if you look at what has done, the actions that have been set, a lot of the different schools and some of the conference commissioners have already laid the groundwork where if one state has so many issues they can't play, that's fine, which means we're going to continue to play on and modify and alter these schedules the way that we need it. And the fact that the five Power Five conference commissioners met with Roger Goodell and felt good about it, because they went to him and they probably got all the insight, knowledge that he was able to share, and the NFL's just been powering through. Like, they're going to figure out a way to get it done, because those aren't academic institutions. That's a league that's owned by some of the most savvy businessmen in the United States, and they're not just taking a year off of earning millions and tens of millions, if not $100 million. Like, that's not how it's going to work. So the NFL is going to power through. College football might be a little bit different, but you saw, like, the university system of the state of Florida came out and said all their big schools, Florida, Florida State, Florida Atlantic, I think Gulf Coast, like all these big schools, Florida International, they're planning on having students on campus in attendance in the fall. And so that's a great thing for college football. But then you look out west in the Cal State system, which is the largest college education system in the country, 480,000 students. Now, none of those schools are in the Pac-12. It's Cal State, Fullerton, and schools like that. But they said they're not having students on campus in the fall. And I just have a hard time believing that you're going to have UCLA and Cal in attendance in person if you don't have the Cal State system in as well, given how large it is and how that state really operates.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, I've been doing a long-form podcast in addition to the Will Cain Show every day, and tomorrow I'm going to be hanging out with Stanford head coach David Shaw. I can't wait to talk to him about what he expects from a Pac-12 season this coming year. I also sat down today with our mutual friend Marcus Spears, and I had a long conversation with Marcus Spears about what it was like to be a Dallas Cowboy. And I want to ask you, Bobby, the same first question that I asked him. I'm going to tease it for you, and you can give us the answer on the other side of this commercial break. But it was this. Hall of Famer Bill Parcells has drafted you. I believe he drafted you 1 year after he drafted Marcus, right? Mm-hmm. You're 06.
Correct.
Your dad played for Parcells, so you already knew of him. You might have even known him, which you can tell us in just a moment. But I want to know your first impressions, and I'm going to tell you what Marcus's was. Hall of Famer and a-hole. That was Marcus's first impressions of Bill Parcells. You're going to hear it on the Will Cain Show podcast, which we'll upload tomorrow. And we'll get Bobby Carpenter's answer to that next on the Will Cain Show.
It could be a routine drive to pick up the kids after school or an epic road trip across the country. No matter where your travels take you, we know those miles count. We're Marathon. We have over 5,700 stations across our great nation. Our people are working hard every day to provide you with quality top-tier gasoline to improve engine performance and fuel your life. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
This is Will Cain.
Jerry in New Jersey. What's up, Jerry?
This is just making me sick to my stomach right now. That you think the Cowboys are going to make it to the Super Bowl with Dak Prescott.
That accent, it's wonderful. Are you doing that, or that's real?
Well, this is how I talk. I'm from New Jersey. I'm Italian.
Go
okay,
on.
Okay, so let me finish.
I'm going to let you finish.
You make me sick saying these Cowboys are going to go to the Super Bowl.
What was Bobby Carpenter's first impression of Bill Parcells? The Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. This is Shower Sessions. Half interview, half concert, all from the shower. Watch new music videos and exclusive interviews now on YouTube.com/Progressive. progressive. All right, Bobby, I told you I did a long-form interview this morning with our buddy Marcus Spears. It's going to upload, and people will be able to listen to that conversation in the next 12 hours. But one of my first questions to Marcus was this. It's 2005. You just drafted in the first round with the 20th overall pick by the Dallas Cowboys. What was your first impression of Bill Parcells? He said, Hall of Famer and a-hole. He went on to tell us about his relationship with Parcells, both the negative and the positive. But 1 year later, you were drafted in the first round by that Hall of Fame coach as well. What was your story with Bill Parcells?
I guess coming in, I had an idea of what he was because my dad kind of, I wouldn't say warned me, but my dad knew him as a coordinator and then a head coach. So it was even kind of a different relationship there. And so I come in and I'll never forget, it was in front of maybe the defense or, you know, the linebackers. I don't think it was a whole team meeting, but it very well could have been, or just in front of the whole team at practice. But he made a comment to me and it was like something about my dad. And he's like, but you're nothing like your dad. He's like, you got way too much Susie in you. And knowing, like, that's my mother's name. And, you know, I sat there, like, I didn't respond. There's no retort to that. And I and like later on after everybody walked away, and this is what Bill was really good at. He could sit there and humble somebody before the team, but then away from him, he's going to bring you back. And he walks by, he goes, they don't know your mom was way tougher than your dad. Like, as everyone else walked away. Mm-hmm. And so, like, that was the stuff that he would do where he would kind of strip you down in public and then build you up kind of in private. And so, you know, I knew that he's kind of comes off as a jerk, but like he's what you see is what you get, man. Like, and in the NFL where a lot of guys will say one thing to your face and then go say something else to management or ownership, or you don't get a deal and like they're the ones driving that. Like, you knew exactly where you stood with Bill Parcells at every moment of the day.
You know, Bobby, what's funny is I have dealt with managers like that. I will tell you that's true in this media industry where they will tell you exactly how they feel about you. And it changes. It's not constant. You know, it's not, this is the way I feel about you and I always will feel that way, which makes it a little more maddening. But does that in your experience make you play better or does that make you play worse? Because he was definitely managing you from a negative perspective, right? Like he was trying to tear you down, I guess, to build you back up. But listen to both you and Marcus. I mean, it's no doubt. Like, it wasn't just that he was an a-hole. He knew he was an a-hole.
He knew he was, but he knew he was so different with each guy. Like, he had an unbelievable ability to motivate and get the best out of guys. And I think it was my rookie year. And because he had a great relationship with Terry Glenn, which I couldn't believe after calling him she and all those things in New England. Terry comes back, and Terry was his guy. Like, he defended Terry to the end. And I come into our locker room before one of the last games of the season. He has, like, three Buckeye leaves on Terry's locker. Says, earn these tonight. And Terry, like, looks at that man. You see his eyes light up. He slaps him on his helmet and goes out and has a really good game. I'm sitting in the tunnel before the Seattle game. And this will never leave me because it was the last game he coached. It's my first playoff game, and it's the game that people identify with, you know, Tony and bobbling the snap. But it was a game I ended up playing pretty well in. And I'm standing there in the tunnel beside him. He looks over to me, and he's like, your dad always used to play well in big games like this. And then he just walked away. And like, you don't know what to say. You're a little shook. He hits you with a jab in the chin. But for me, I think he knew that that was the stuff that I was going to respond to better. And then, like I said, he'll bring you back, and he'll say some positive things. But he's always throwing out challenges like that. And those are the type of guys that he tries to draft, I think, and try to accumulate on the team, were guys that he knew that he could get the best out of with just needling them just a little bit here and there.
Bobby Carpenter here on the Will Cain Show. I appreciate you sharing some of those stories with us. I think that's awesome. He knew which buttons to push for you. So you and I were talking during the commercial break, and I was bringing up the fact that no one wants to hear the truth with Jordan. And I think that's an interesting phenomenon. I don't think it only applies to Jordan. It applies to, I'm sure, a lot of people in politics. It applies to any kind of hero making. At some point, the myth becomes more important than the truth. And just nobody's interested. Hey, was he a bully? Was he a jerk to Horace Grant? Was Horace Grant right? Was Scottie Pippen done wrong? It's Michael Jordan, the greatest of all time. End of story. And then you had a story for us.
I did, and I'm going to tell you this, since we did bump back with Eddie Vedder, it's almost like, you know, the Pearl Jam Nirvana debate. Like, people love Nirvana, and you can't say anything bad about them because they're not around to produce music anymore. This is Kurt Cobain's gone. And so the guy who actually made that debate with me, because I was always on the Nirvana side. He's like, if you listen to Pearl Jam, they're far better during the duration, and they had a much longer run, and they had bigger things in front of them, and that guy was Tony Romo. And so friend of mine, when he gets married, his wife, who's fantastic, the lovely Candace, puts together this great video to show the day of his wedding to his groomsmen and everybody. And, she'd reached out to a lot of guys that he looked up to, his heroes or whoever it might be, and to respond if they could put something in it. So this video is fantastic. It's got all these movie clips of his favorite stuff. And we're watching this. I'm like, man, Candace is unbelievable. Not only is she beautiful and fantastic, but like to put this time and effort in is great. And then it closes with this. And it was unbelievable. It was almost like I felt like I've had a lot of interactions with Michael Jordan just viewing this. But Michael Jordan responded. He was the only one, she said, that responded. And he's like, when your wife reached out, Tony, this is something I want to do. I want to be a part of it. Like, don't go posting this on YouTube or any of that stuff or social media, whatever, in its infancy. And he's like, asked to give wedding advice. And he gets human for a moment because he's like, I'm a guy that's divorced. I think he was remarried at that point in time. He's like, so I don't know how much advice I can give you. He's like, as far as that, but I can tell you this. He's like, if you work at being a husband, the way that you work at playing football, he's like, you're going to be fine in this. He's like, I probably learned that a little too late. It was a moment, Will, where I think you saw a little bit of the human side of Michael Jordan. We got to see little bits of it here and there, but you can't criticize someone that's been deified to that level unless they open themselves up to it and show a little bit of that human aspect. And I guess when I saw that from him, I was like, man, like, this isn't be like Mike drinking the Gatorade and the jump, man. Like, that's a dude that's sitting there telling you, like, I probably wish I would have been a better husband the first time around, or I wish I would have done a better job in my first marriage, whatever it was. And you got to see somebody talk about a failing in their life, which to me, it's almost like Michael Jordan has never failed at anything.
That's not where I thought that story was going. That's an awesome story. When you started that during the commercial break, I told you to stop because I don't like to hear stories. It's not that I don't want to hear it twice. I want to hear it for the first time on air. I want to hear, I want it to be real, the reaction. So when you started that story, I thought you were going to say Jordan didn't respond or that he was a jerk or something like that. I don't know why I thought that, but because Tony's a star. Tony's a big star, but he's not Jordan level. And when he got married, it was even earlier, I don't know where Tony's stardom is now compared to when it was when he's a starting quarterback of the NFL. I mean, Jordan's just in a different stratosphere than everybody. Not just than Tony, than everybody. I would have guessed almost 100% that you were going to tell us that Jordan didn't respond. That's pretty amazing. He took the time and sent in a video at Candace's request.
It is. And, like, there's some other guys that turned it down or just didn't respond, and she never heard from them. And so, I never want to bring those names up because I asked her that. And I was like, how did you get Michael Jordan? She goes, I reached out through him. Like, he reached back pretty quick. And he put together something that just wasn't some stock answer. Well, that's what I thought was impressive, is the fact that he put together something that actually was, like, human with a real personal experience and a personal touch. Just, hey, nah, man, you're a great quarterback. Congratulations on this day. Have a great marriage. I mean, it's probably 90 seconds to 2 minutes, but it was something that was deep there. And for guys like of my age, I thought it was fantastic, like of just kind of worshiping that guy as you were growing up. But like he's almost above reproach, but he is a human being, and he does have failings. And that's what I think people fail to realize. But once you've deified him to the point that he's above all wrongdoing, so anybody that pushes back,
right.
Like, you're a hater then, not saying, hey, he's really good, but he's not perfect. Nobody is. Like, he could have been a leader and a great leader in another way. Tom Brady was an unbelievable leader, and he's demanding on the practice field. He's also one of the nicest human beings I've ever met or played with. And so you don't necessarily have to be that guy. And we always say, the ends now justified the means at which it was done, and so you think it's okay. But there's other ways to do it. I guess the question always is, Will, could he have done it another way based upon his personality? And I don't know if that's true.
Right. I don't know either. I don't know how much that's baked into the entire DNA of who he is. Really good stories, Bobby. Thanks for sharing that stuff, man. That's cool. I appreciate you hanging out with us today.
Hey, Will, anytime, man. I know that you're trapped down there in Tennessee, and I'm here to help and give you a little relief and make sure that you're doing your best job and to keep you accountable to everybody out there.
Okay, all right. Good, then let's have you on a little more. I appreciate it, Bobby. Thank you.
My pleasure, thanks.
That's Bobby Carpenter, ESPN NFL analyst here on The Will Cain Show. All right, has LeBron James waved the white flag in the Battle of GOATs? It's coming up on The Will Cain Show.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
This is Will Cain.
You can't walk through life that if something you say or something you champion offends one person, then you must stop, because you will not be able to do anything.
Doug Whaley was the GM of the Buffalo Bills. Let's ask him what he thinks about the NFL's efforts to increase minority hiring across the league. Doug Whaley's coming up on the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio in about 15 minutes. Jalen Jacoby, the after show, continues this Sunday following the premiere of the latest 30 for 30, Lance Part 1. Immediately after the show airs, listen to the wrap-up podcast as Jalen Jacoby react to the film that features Armstrong himself and one of the biggest doping scandals in sports history. Subscribe now to Jalen Jacoby, the after show, on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Look at that, Jalen Jacoby continuing the after show after The Last Dance. Going to do Lance as well. Then what we have, guys, we got Bruce Lee coming up after that, right? And then
Maguire Sosa.
Yeah. Yep. I know Nuno's real hyped about the Bruce Lee one. I know Pat's real hyped about the Lance Armstrong one. I imagine Bubba's pretty hyped about the baseball one.
So I guess we got it all covered.
I guess we do. That means it's time to play Butthurt. Take it away, Mike.
That's an interesting segue. All right, we'll start here. Who would not last long in solitary confinement?
Easy.
I think it's easy. I think it's easy too.
I think you're going to get it wrong.
Sounds like you know who the answer is.
I think that's because you know the target on your forehead.
Okay, I'm ready. 3, 2, 1.
Will!
Wait, who did you say, Will?
Mike A.
He's second for sure.
Oh, yeah, I could be second.
I'm basically in solitary confinement right now. I mean, what are you talking about?
Yeah, and look how well you're doing.
What do you think? What's wrong with me? You think I'm just a very social animal and I'm my flower isn't blooming?
Somebody needs to agree or disagree with you for you to continue to move on.
Otherwise, what? I keep pacing the same spot over and over.
Pretty much.
I do that, by the way. Yes, I pace back and forth. Like when we do the radio show or when I'm on a phone call, I will wear a path into a carpet, without a doubt.
You stared at a bird for 45 minutes yesterday.
You be quiet. The only reason you're not the answer, you and Bubba and Nuno, you're single, so you're doing just fine. We're not going to be able to say you guys are.
Yeah, we're truly in solitary. I'm literally by myself nonstop. I'm already in solitary confinement.
Are you pretty happy by yourself?
I'm in solitary confinement watching Moana, so I mean, I survived that.
I picture Bubba in solitary confinement, just staring blankly straight ahead and eventually just nodding and going, yep.
Yeah, content. Content, yep. Right? I think Mike A is sneaky higher than me, though. I think Mike needs somebody to bounce an ID off of. He's got some things to say. He wants to talk about some Jets draft picks. You know, it's not going to last long if he can't get that off his chest.
I could do a 2-hour post pod on the Jets draft.
You would.
Half the time when Mike A is yelling, he's so loud that no one else can get a word in edgewise, so he's basically talking to himself anyway.
Wow.
Okay, so I'm least capable of dealing with solitary confinement. All right. If I were put in one of those little jail cells, I would just do so many push-ups for the first.
Oh, yeah.
4 hours.
Ripped.
Yeah, well, the first 4 hours. And then it would be real bad.
Push-ups and sit-ups.
All right, what's next?
Who has the worst attitude towards life?
Ooh, is right. Ooh, worst attitude towards life.
Bubba's deep in thought. It's a tough one. I don't know.
It is a tough one. All I know who's not in. There's two that are out on this. And then there's three that are definite candidates here.
I think I agree with you, but I think one stands above the rest.
I want to know who you think is out. Okay. Worst attitude towards life. Three, two, one.
Nuno.
Didn't even answer. I couldn't do it.
I couldn't even answer because I knew it was going to come at me.
1 minute.
I'll tell you, I thought Mike A. and myself were not candidates on this one. Who did you think, Mike? Who'd you think, Mike?
Oh, I said Nuno loud and proud.
No, you said you agreed. Two were
out.
Oh,
yeah, it's me and you. Me and you were not.
Yeah, we're the social guys that have to talk. We're pretty happy with life as it is.
I picked Bubba.
You picked Bubba, Pat?
Yeah. This is just part of my ongoing feud with Bubba.
Yeah, I was saying you just hate Bubba. That's a thing.
You want to try and fit a quick one?
Yeah, do a quick one.
Who's the worst drunk?
Oh, that's a good one.
Wow.
Oh. Worst drunk. Okay, I'm ready. 3, 2, 1.
Pat.
Yep.
Did you say me, Pat?
Yep.
So did I.
Oh, my gosh. We need to break that one down. There was two me's in there. I have so many questions on who's the worst drunk. Doug Whaley next.
Thank you for listening to the Will Cain Podcast. You can listen to The Will Cain Show live weekdays at 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. The Will Cain Podcast.